welcome to Straight Talk on Blog Talk. This is Brother Gregory, and we're going to be talking about the kingdom of God, and specifically we're going to be talking about cults, cult leaders, and other politicians and priests. I could also use a few other words that would describe the idea of a cult leader and what it is, but over the next 2.5 hours, we're on Blog Talk, and then again on Liberty Radio Live, we're going to talk about this concept of cult leaders. But first, on this day in history, in 1567, Mary, Queen of Scots, was imprisoned in the Lochleven Castle in Scotland, and this was over dispute as to who would be the leader of the people and rule over them and exercise authority one over the other. And this, there were huge armies that would amass to fight over who was going to be, in essence, the cult leader, who was going to rule over the minds and lives of people. Because why did they need them? Because they themselves, the people, could not lead themselves. They could not muster enough critical thinking to make enough choices to actually rule over themselves as individuals and come to common consensus. There were so many different opinions as to what was right and what was wrong and what was good and what was evil. It's also, on this day in history, we see the Ford Motor Company becoming an corporation, an incorporated entity. But in 1933, President Franklin D. Roosevelt opened his New Deal recovery program by signing bank, rail, and industry bills and initiating farm aid. And we still have not recovered from that act, the New Deal. The New Deal isn't all that new. It's actually extremely old, and you'd be surprised how old it is. But I thought I would also point out, on this day in history, there were two other people who were actually born. 1829, Geronimo, the Apache leader, was born, and also Stan Laurel, which brings me to one of his famous lines that we hear from his movies, is, "This is another fine mess you've gotten us into." And, of course, we can apply that to Franklin D. Roosevelt, but really, the socialism of Franklin D. Roosevelt started long before the New Deal. And the reason the New Deal is kind of a milestone in moving towards a socialist state is because of all the things that had gone on before it allowed it to fit into place to the point where it became this major change in the direction of society. It wasn't an about face, because we would have noticed that, but it was steering us off the course of a righteous government into a self-righteous government. And we went from, over a period of 200 years, we went from a republic to a democracy, to a socialist democracy, and to what has now become virtually an imperial state. And I use America as an example, the United States as an example, but the reality is this is the process that's gone on in many countries all around the world. And the reason why is there's a process in us that drags us, drives us in the direction of totalitarianism. And socialism is one of the great ways to move that way, because the greatest destroyers of freedom are the givers of gifts, gratuities, and benefits. And socialism allows you to give lots of benefits because it allows you to take away from everybody. And we're going to eventually have another show on socialism and talk about what exactly that is. I'm working on an article right now to go into News with Views, but today we promised to talk to you about cults. So let's look at a few of the definitions. There's more than half a dozen different definitions of cult if you look it up in any major dictionary. And the first definition, which would be the primary one, is a specific system of religious worship especially with reference to its rights and deity. Now, that's not always the case, because in the top 10 cults, really doesn't have anything to do with religion, doesn't have anything to do with the description of religion in the Bible as to what religion is. It certainly doesn't have anything to do with any particular worshiping as we would think of in churches, but it is a form of worship. But it really doesn't necessarily have any deity. Some of the cults of history don't even ascribe to the existence of a deity, believe it or not. So that's, of course, that's one definition, and then there's a sect devoted to such a system of belief or a system of religious worship. We have a tendency to think that religious worship has to do with what we think about God and who we think God is, and is he Yahweh, is he Adonai, is he Allah, and so we put all that into the category of religion. But of course, religion has numerous definitions. So all this, when you start defining words with words that have multiple definitions, you can get huge number of combinations of ideas when you use these words. So when we talk about these things, we have to define them in context. A third definition is a quasi-religious organization using devious psychological techniques to gain and control adherence. Now, this is a very common definition, very much different than the original one, because it's talking about psychological techniques to gain control over individuals. Not just a specific system of religious worship, but one that's gaining control over the minds of the people. And usually when people talk about cults today, that's the way that they're thinking of them. Some sort of religious group with the intention of deviously taking psychological control over its followers. And if you look at the top 10 cults in the world today, that's exactly what you see. Social, a group having an exclusive ideology and rituals, practices centered on sacred symbols, especially characterized by a lack of organizational structure. So that's a peculiar definition. That's definition number 4. But it talks about an exclusive ideology. So it has a unique ideology with rituals and practices that may be somewhat unique to them. Rituals are just simply what they do as a matter of practice. Intense interest in the devotion to a person, idea, or an activity, which is part of why they get this control over the followers, is that there becomes this devotional view of an individual. Now, let's play that out for a second before we go on. Devotion has to do with attention, supplication, obedience. We use the word adherent, where you're holding some individual up as a sort of icon or charismatic leader. Well, we do that all the time in government. We saw that in the last presidential election with Barack Obama. There were many people that were just ardently fans of Barack Obama. They actually fainted when he spoke at his gatherings and his assemblies. So these are certainly devoted Advent individuals. And, of course, like Ron Paul has a lot of avid adherence to the philosophies and teachings of Ron Paul. So is Ron Paul a cult? Well, he could fit that description, as well as Barack Obama's followers, as maybe even Romney's followers. I don't know if they're as passionate, but they could fit into some of these definitions of a cult, but do they use devious psychological techniques to gain control over their adherents? Well, yeah, actually, sometimes they do. Politicians have been known to lie. They've been known to offer things they know they never deliver. So that would be devious technique of lying to the people to gain control over them, to get them to go out and do their bidding. But now, in essence, if they're not lying and they're really offering something, then that we can't say that they're devious. Although we know that a lot of politicians over the past have lied because they go in on one policy and they actually are doing another. So all politics has an element of cult to them. They have followers, adherents, they have an ideology, they have rituals and practices. They salute flags, they say Pledge of Allegiance. All that are elements of a cult. And if they lie, then we're dealing with the deviousness of them. And psychological techniques, well, certainly they do. They deal in fear. I remember back the speeches that were being given after 9/11. The use of the word terrorist threat, terrorist attacking our way of life. This is a technique of fear. So you have loyalty to parties where they're going to vote for the Democratic candidate no matter what, or they're going to vote for the Republican candidate no matter what, no matter who he is. We're going to give our support to this candidate because he won and 51% of the people or 20% of the people, whatever it is, picked this guy. So now we're all going to vote for him even though we think he's a jerk or a liar or he's not going to do what he says. But we have this blind loyalty to a party. Now, we do the same thing in religion, and religion is usually what we're talking about when we're talking about a cult, but the reality is religion is what you believe. And people believe in politics. And governments today are deeply enmeshed in religious activities. We don't call them religious, we call them political, we call them socioeconomic. Welfare systems, according to the definition of the Bible, is religion. Because religion in the Bible is how you take care of the needy of your society, widows and orphans. And so how you do that is the kind of religion that you have. And so there's an element of religion. I mean, politics takes faith. We call it that faith, full faith and credit, allegiance. I mean, full faith and credit. Where does the word credit come from? It comes from the Latin credo, believe, credit. I believe. You have faith in that somebody's going to pay you or whatever you want to call it. So there's elements of that in all these relationships in society because it's social. The word socius means associate. And that's where we get into cult leaders being mostly sociopaths. And we're going to talk a little bit about what a sociopath is. This word cult, though, we're going to go step back in history a little bit. The word cult itself comes from the Latin cultus, which of course probably comes from a previous word that going back even farther. But it means a number of different things. Habitation, tilling, refinement, worship. But specifically, culting has to do with tilling, cultivating. And of course, we go back to those adherents that follow, and we call it a cult if they're using deceptive means to follow. They're cultivating adherents. They're getting them to think a certain way, to act a certain way. And many times that way is very destructive. And that's why cult has this very bad, fearful connotation today. You know, oh, it's a cult. And we're going to look at all kinds of things in this concept of cult. We're going to take a look at the 10 warning signs of potentially unsafe groups and leaders, 10 warning signs regarding people involved in or with a potentially unsafe group leader, and then we're going to look at the 10 signs of a safe group or leader. And you can take out your notepads and pencils and write some of these things down. You can probably find a lot of them on the net. But these lists are by men who study cults, study the control that cult leaders have over individuals, try to help people get out of cults when they are enmeshed in it and become these loyal adherents who seem to have lost all sense of critical thinking. We're going to go over the top 10 cults of the United States, at least according to one leading study on cults. And I shouldn't say United States. I'm talking they're in the United States, most of them. They have a presence here, but some of them have started in other countries like Korea and France and what have you. But it's amazing the thousands of followers that they have. And some of these cult leaders, and because they put it over here, cult being this bad thing, have caused the death of thousands of people over the years, different cult leaders. And many of those deaths were by suicide, voluntarily killing themselves, which shows this tremendous grip that people can have. But, of course, countries all over the world for thousands of years have had people following politicians, leaders, political leaders, and they go out and fight to the death to defend flags and their country and charge into hails of bullets and artillery and die by the thousands, even by the millions. They kill their own citizens by the thousands, by the millions. They murder, they torture, they commit all kinds of heinous acts, all because they're following a leader. We see that during the Inquisition. So are all popes during the Inquisition cult leaders? Well, certainly by the definition that we have seen, they could fit that way. But would it be exclusive to popes? There are a lot of other religious groups that were actually, there were Protestant groups that were burning people at the stake, hanging people, witchcraft trials. These leaders say, oh, well, we have to kill this woman because she has an opinion. And so they go out and hang poor Mary and kill her because she has an opinion contrary to theirs. And this is done by Protestants. If they had the mechanism and the centralization of power that the Roman Church had, they would probably have followed many of the same. They would have had their own inquisitions. They certainly had their own witchcraft trials. So this is not exclusive. We don't want to talk about Roman Church, Protestant Church, the Moonies, any of these groups, and begin to section off. Create denomination. Oh, this is a cult and this is not a cult. We want to get down to the principles themselves and understand exactly what it is that makes this a bad cult and how we can protect ourselves and our children from these cults so that you don't have your children caught up and go off and all drink the Kool-Aid or killed or commit suicide, and some of the ridiculous things that some of these cult leaders and cults have been able to get people to do. So anyway, we're going to be looking at that, and we're going to be taking phone calls in Liberty Radio Live, and we're going to be looking at all these different ideas of cults and cultism and cult leaders and the different ones. But let's go on a little bit more here to look at this idea of sociopath. A sociopath is a person with psychopathic personality whose behavior is, they say, antisocial, often criminal. Now, antisocial is a value judgment, but often criminal and who lacks a sense of moral responsibility, a social conscience. He doesn't have a social conscience, which is kind of an oxymoron in my opinion. Anyway, your conscience is given to you by God originally. That's your consciousness. But when they talk about social conscience, they say, what is socially acceptable in your society? And so that's a relative statement. If you're a cannibal and you don't eat all of the missionary that your mother prepared for you for dinner because you feel guilty about it, you're a sociopath. I mean, or at least you lack a social conscience because you don't want to eat the missionary. So if your consciousness of right and wrong is dependent upon what your society says is right and wrong, then it's okay to burn witches. It's okay to torture unbelievers because their society says that's okay and that's a good thing. So a social conscience is kind of an oxymoron. It's kind of it's so relative to whatever society that you live in, it doesn't really say anything. But when we talk about a moral conscience, and even that is subject because what one people think is moral and other people don't think is moral. I mean, I think it's immoral to covet your neighbor's goods, to want anything that belongs to your neighbor, to want the rich to pay for your welfare or your health care. I believe that that's immoral. Just because they're rich, they have to pay for what you want. That's coveting, and I consider that immoral, and I can use the Ten Commandments as an explanation why I consider that immoral, but I just consider it immoral. Most of my beliefs depend on what I just believe. It just seems that way. It's self-evident. But people don't believe or see it, so I have to hold up knowledge and say, well, the Ten Commandments says I'm right. That doesn't make me right. It's just somebody else who wrote down the Ten Commandments agrees with me. Unfortunately, most Christians don't agree with the Ten Commandments. I mean, they want to have them posted out there in the public square, but they think it's absolutely okay to covet their neighbor's goods through the agency of government. And I don't. So I'm different. So social conscience. Lacking in a social conscience is really not saying much. Lacking in objective thinking, moral thinking, well, that could make a lot more people. I mean, the average individual believes that, I should say the statistics, at least one statistical reference says that 4% of the people in the world today are sociopaths based on this definition. But the reality is there's elements of sociopathy in all of us to one degree or another because all of us have sinned before the eyes of God. In other words, all of us have strayed from this moral standard conscience. If there is a moral standard, and a lot of people want to even say there is no moral standard, it's what you feel like. But there is a moral standard of right and wrong. There is a better way. And it's up to everybody to find that better way, to seek it out, to search it out. So anyway, sociopaths are interested only in their personal needs and desires without concerns for the effects of their behavior on others. And of course, all socialists have that element in them. They want benefits at somebody else's expense. And they're not interested in that other person's situation or need. They want what they want. And they don't mind taking it from somebody else in order to get it. So all socialists have an element of sociopathy in them. They don't mind, they don't call it stealing to take from the rich and give to the poor. Now, we're not talking about, you know, we have these ideas of Robin Hood where he takes from the rich and gives to the poor. He actually is taking from people who have robbed the poor and giving back to the poor, at least in theory, as the mythology surrounding Robin Hood or the Robin Hood syndrome goes. He's not just taking from any old rich man who happened to go out and work really hard and save up his money and buy a company and build that company up. He's going out and robbing those who've been robbing the poor and giving to them, giving back to the poor. So there's a considerable difference. So there's a book written, Sociopath Next Door, and we'll run through that a little bit. Sociopaths are charming. Sociopaths are more spontaneous and intense than your average person. Sociopaths are incapable of feeling shame, guilt, or remorse. They can do remarkably evil things and think, well, that's okay. And I'll give you an example in Liberty Radio Live of such a sociopath who had killed a number of people and could not see that he did anything wrong. And where did that come from? Because these are complex issues. And the fact is, a trauma earlier in his life led to this. And we'll see that often with sociopaths and cult leaders, that they themselves were traumatized in an earlier life. Now, we can't blame their wickedness on, you know, their mother made them do it, their daddy made them do it, the devil made them do it. The fact is they have to be responsible. And there's a reason why they are carried away with a particular line of thinking, and we'll explore that also. But just for the sake of understanding the sociopath and taking a quick look at it, they seem to lack this guilt for doing harm to people. We're not talking about guilt because you didn't go to Mass on Sunday. We're talking about guilt because you killed somebody. They don't feel bad about it. They feel perfectly okay. And there's quite a few more traits of that, and it's going to take us at least 2 hours to get through all that. And I would love you to join us on Liberty Radio Live, and we'll explore these ideas of sociopathy and cults.
You have been listening to The Keys of the Kingdom with Brother Gregory of His Holy Church. For more information on the educational ministry provided by His Holy Church and Brother Gregory, including services, counseling, lectures, books, and other audio materials, please write to His Church at Summer Lake, Box 10, Summer Lake, Oregon, 97640. You can also find us on the web at www.hisholychurch.net.